This is A Story of Sorts, the podcast mostly about bookish stuff. And I am your host, Karina Pereira. Hello, everyone. On this episode, I chat with Liana about the Base Book Space, a new Black-owned bookstore in Rotterdam. We also talk about representation in books and why it is important to give translators of color the chance to translate the works of authors of color. Have a listen. Liana, welcome to A Story of Sorts.
Thank you, Karina.
Tell us about yourself.
So my name is Liana. I'm from Rotterdam, born and raised. I'm 24 years old. I study philosophy at the Erasmus University here. And I'm the founder of the Base Book Space.
What is the Base Book Space?
For now, it's mostly a web shop where I sell books written by Black authors. But I hope to expand it to become more of a physical place, where readers and authors can meet each other and, yeah, have a great time around literature.
And how did the idea to open a bookstore to highlight works by Black authors came about?
I always loved reading. As a child, I was always reading. At some point, my parents gave me a limit for how many books I could read.
Yeah, like a day or a year or
yeah, a day limit of one book a day, because I was a child, so I read those thin books that you could read multiple ones in a day, and then I was only allowed to read one book a day, and then I started reading books with more pages, of course. So I was still reading just as many hours.
So just still in the phone book to keep reading. Exactly. And encyclopedia.
Yeah, I really read everything. And then I always thought it would be super nice to have a bookstore, because it would just be books all around me, being able to read during the day as a job. But then I always thought it was something that you could only do if you were a bit older and had money and all those things. And I just went to school and did different things. But then last year, I met two sisters who started the Belmer Bookstore, which is a Black-owned bookstore in Amsterdam. And they also focus on books by Black authors. And I asked them how they did it, because they are pretty young. And they just said that they started with one book. So for me, that was really a great inspiration to just begin, even though I didn't have much money. And to just start, for me, a web shop, because that was something that was feasible, instead of focusing on having a big physical bookstore immediately. And then the reason to focus on Black authors and Black myself, and I think it's really important that books that are written by Black authors are given a stage and are seen more and read by more people. And it's just so nice to have books that are about people who look like you, written by people who look like you. And yeah, that's the reason.
And how old were you when your parents started to put the one book a day? I'm just very interested in that story.
I think I was about 9 years old.
Wow.
Yeah, it didn't last long though, because they figured I started reading those bigger books with more pages, and then they just figured, like, okay, like, what are we even doing? It doesn't work. And
you found a loop.
Yeah, and they also didn't want to limit me too much, because obviously they thought that reading was good for me and for my development, so they gave up, basically.
So maybe that was a trick. Maybe they're like, we're just gonna pretend it's like a bad thing, that it's like not, she can't do it, so she will want to do it.
maybe.
So what was the process of opening the Base Book Space? And I'm asking this a little bit like for other people are maybe thinking about starting something. Like, was it very complicated to start it off?
Well, the start was very easy, and I thought I was done, but that was only the beginning, because I went to the Chamber of Commerce to get registered, and then I thought to myself, now I am a bookshop owner. But of course, it just started then, and I had to do lots of other things. So I had to find some place to get my books from, because obviously you have to buy them at like a retail, not a retailer, but the place where you get a supplier, where you get books with a discount for bookstores.
Yeah.
And then the biggest one in the Netherlands actually is really expensive. Like, you have to have a sort of a subscription, and I couldn't really afford that. But then there was another one that only sold English language books. And for me, that fit it, because I always like reading in English as well. Yeah. And their services were really cheap. So that was the most important thing for me, so I could start buying books.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah. And then setting up a website, I used Shopify, which is really accessible, and lots of web shops use it. And they have templates, and you can just build your own website, and it's easy to use.
Okay, and then you just kind of made a budget and how you wanted to do it. Because your idea is about having one book that it's highlighted every month, right? And then you sell...
Yeah, 5 books, actually.
Oh, 5. Oh, yes. Yeah.
So I pick 5 books every month. Also, I've read all the books myself, so I can give it like a personal recommendation. Then the next month, there will be 5 different books, and I highlight those books, write a little about them, what it's about. And then if I can, I try to interview an author if they're available. Yeah.
And why was it called, why did you decide to call it the Base Book Space?
I wanted something that had a bit of a rhyme in it. And I really didn't, like a lot of bookstores have a name of an author. So for example, there's this bookstore in the States, it's called Baldwin and Co.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
For James Baldwin. But I felt like I couldn't pick one author to name a bookstore after. That would be too hard and also too much of a focus, I thought. Like, if you pick one author, then it's like, oh, that's that bookstore with that one author. So I wanted something different. And then I also wanted book space. That's the first thing I came up with, book space, because I wanted it to have the potential to be a space, not just a store or a shop, not just about buying and selling books, but about more than that. So the book space part was important for me, and it came first. And then I just thought of, I needed a word with a B to rhyme with it. Base sounded nice. And also it felt for me like stories and storytelling is like a base, like something we can always go back to, a basis of our culture, a base of being. So that's why.
That's really interesting. Yeah, I had no idea why, but I always wondered, why the Base Book Space? It's not because, unlike Baldwin and the other shops that actually have a name, it's not obvious why the name. So it's really interesting. And do you prefer fiction or nonfiction? Like, do you have a preference? Personally? I mean, not even for the shop, but more personally.
As a kid, I only read fiction. I really detested nonfiction, because nonfiction for kids is often like, learn something about nature. And then it's this book with pictures about nature. And then you have to learn something about that. And I just didn't like those kind of books. I mean, I was already in school 5 days a week. So why would I want nonfiction, you know? And as a child, I think throughout my teenage years, I also only read fiction. And then maybe as an adult, for the first time, I picked up some nonfiction book, which I think was about politics. And I actually thought it was pretty interesting. But I still preferred fiction because I really like the way the stories were written. But now I think I've really been reading lots of nonfiction lately, and I really enjoy learning when I'm reading, learning about new things. And I've also discovered that, for example, memoirs can be written really poetically. It is nonfiction. It's a story about someone's life that's really happened, but it can still be written like a story. Yeah, I'm leaning more towards nonfiction now, in a way.
Yeah, because you have... I forgot the name, actually. It was a book that was recently banned. Ooh.
The 1619 Project?
No, I forgot the name of the author, actually. But I remember listening to the memoir. He's a queer Black author. And I remember learning so much about the history of America. Like, for example, we are taught, or maybe, I mean, something that we learn, maybe not at school if we are not, you know, in the United States, but we learn in general knowledge that Abraham Lincoln was not, you know, as bad as everyone else was there, so he was not a racist. And then you kind of actually, from that book, you actually learned that's not what he did. Like, what he did was, well, it was basically to go against opposition. And it's stuff that you don't really know, like, in general, that people don't really talk about. Yeah, and this book was about this person, like, this guy. But then he talks about his life, learning history about, like, you know, Black people in America by himself, since the school didn't teach him that. And it's very interesting, because then you also learn history through him and through a memoir. And I really like memoir as well. I think it's a very nice way. I mean, sometimes even getting authors that you don't know anything about.
Exactly. It doesn't have to be a famous person writing their memoir, or something that someone that has been through lots of big events. It can be something small and personal and so touching.
Yeah, I've actually read the last book that I've read in audio, because I only read nonfiction in audio, was Juneteenth. And that is also, it's a memoir, and then you learn about what happened in Texas, but it's mostly a memoir.
Yeah.
It's very interesting. For the base book space, do you focus more on fiction, nonfiction, a little bit of both each month?
Yeah, it's a little bit of both. And I also noticed that I don't really have an official way that I select. It's not like, oh, this month I have to have one fiction, one nonfiction political thing, one short story thing. I mean, I try to have a mix of different genres, but it's also just what I come across. And then I pick it and I'm like, okay, this came out this month. I want to have it.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's a mix. It really is a mix. And I would also like to include a bit more some genres that I don't read that much myself, like, for example, science fiction. Yeah, just to have a really diverse selection. But because it's so little books now, it really reflects my own taste.
Yeah, and what you're reading at
Yeah, and what I'm reading. Yeah.
Tell us about the importance of promoting reading with children.
Yeah, I think it's really important because as a child, I always loved reading. But a lot of kids actually don't like reading. And they are forced in school to read books they don't like. And they have to read texts that are boring. And I think a lot of people lose their love for reading in school. I'm not sure how it is in different countries, but especially in the Netherlands, even when I talk to people who are like highly educated and they're supposed to, you know, enjoy reading, they still say like, yeah, the way reading was taught in high school or in primary school was just terrible. But I think reading can be so much fun and just something that I really want to share. And I think it's so important that children experience that.
Yeah, because in Portugal it's the same. You have like, basically, they kind of teach you at some point that, for example, picture books are not, you know, clever enough after a certain age. So you should be focusing on just what we call just books with letters. And that's terrible because I think there are so many kids who would continue to read if they were allowed to read what they want.
Yeah.
And I do think that a lot of people get to school, they don't have a background of like parents or guardians that read, and then the first encounter they have with books is something that you have to read, and that kind of kills the vibe, I think, for reading in a sense.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
Also, what is your take on the importance of children seeing themselves represented in books?
Yeah, I remember as a kid growing up, I didn't know what I didn't have, so I've mostly read books by white authors for almost all my life. And it's just because these books were available and also because they were recommended. So in the school library, in the municipal library, that's just the books that were there. And for example, you would also get a list in school for books that you have to read.
Mm-hmm.
You have to pick 5 or 10 from a list of 30 books maybe. And all of these books are white authors. And I didn't know that I was missing something until a bit later when I started reading books by Black authors, and I felt that I recognized myself and that I saw stories that mattered to me more. And that feeling of representation, I think it's so important if we could have that for children at a younger age, already with the picture books.
Yeah.
Like if you have picture books, I remember having lots of picture books about animals and about kids, I don't know, maybe white kids or kids that are like weird colors, but to have books where the children actually look like you and the people around you, especially like in the Netherlands, in a city like Rotterdam, there are so many kids living here from all over the world, and then you have a picture book in school and it's just white kids.
Yeah.
Right? And and also later on in the books with letters, that the stories are something that the kids see themselves represented in. I think that's so important. And here in Rotterdam, there's this publishing house. It started in 2020. It's called Wilde Haren. And they are publishing inclusive children's books. And for example, they also published a book that has kids that have different like things, like someone has a disability, someone has something else that's preventing them from joining in with the quote-unquote normal kids.
Yeah.
But that book especially shows kids that it's fine to be different and you don't have to adhere to a certain norm. And they're also really emphasizing Black authors and Black illustrators. So, yeah, I think it's for adults, it's different because we're already older. And sometimes I meet people and they don't understand, like, for example, a white Dutch person, why they should read a book by a Black author. And then I'm like, yeah, fine, I'll give up if you're so stubborn. But for kids, it's really important.
Yeah, but especially like it's so easy for you to say that things are not necessary when you have them, right? If you see yourself represented in stories, you don't think something is missing and you think that's the normal and that's, you know, that's where things should be. So yeah, it's kind of, sometimes it's a bit complicated to try to explain to people that it's not a fad, that yeah. we're not doing this because it's fashionable or, you know, whatever. Because only people who actually don't see themselves growing up in the books that they read and in the media that they consume can actually speak if it's necessary or not. And I think a lot of white people don't know that either and don't realize why it is so important when you've always had it. Like, for you, it's not important because you always had it, right? I mean, for white people, yeah, for me, exactly. Like, I never lacked representation in media. So it's very easy to kind of think, oh, no, it's the representation that exists is enough. We have, like, one queer movie. Like, because, yeah, I wanted to ask, because you were born in the Netherlands and you have roots in Suriname. And so you did not find ever stories growing up. Like, it wasn't something that even, like, I don't know, with the background of your family that they tried to find for you. There was maybe not that type of conversation yet.
Yeah, maybe it wasn't that easy. I'm not exactly sure why my parents didn't. I do remember, I'm not sure if you had a book from it or if they just told it by heart, but to hear Anansi stories
as a kid. The spider.
Yeah, Anansi the spider. So maybe we had one book mm-hmm. about Anansi, which of course is not a Surinamese thing specifically. It's like a broader African and African diaspora story that lives on. But other than that, yeah, maybe it wasn't that available, or they just didn't think it was that important. I also don't think my parents knew, for example, my mom, who was white, she always had that representation, right?
So yeah, no, yeah, of course.
For her to think about her kids having a different skin color, a different way of living in life, I don't think she really realized that when we were that young.
Yeah, especially if there is no conversation, because I think nowadays there is a lot of conversation about it. But you still find, sometimes I think, and especially in children's books, but very often also in adult literature, you want to recommend a book about, I don't know, ace people, sexual people, or trans people or something, that it's not specifically about their transition, but mm-hmm. it just has a trans person in it. And I do think that sometimes young adult has a lot of stuff. And because usually young adult stories are more like stories with a moral, like children's mm-hmm. books. Yeah. And literature sometimes is complicated. And it is very often that we, at like the bookstore I work at, try to order certain books that has the exact story that someone is looking for. Because they say, oh, I'm looking for a story where there's two fathers or two mothers or this or that. And some things, they exist, but they are complicated to get to. So you have to either contact the author or contact the publisher. And then sometimes you have to buy like 5 books at once, which is a big risk for a small independent shop. Because we don't know if it's, even if we try, of course, to sell those books, because it's also important for us to have diversity and to kind of like put those stories in people's hands. Otherwise, they will probably not look for it or find them. Sometimes it's a very big risk to buy 5 books because someone wants that story. And so they are not, those stories, even when they exist, they are not immediately available.
Yeah, I have the same problem because it's way easier to get books that are already in the mainstream, books that are published that are already well-known, authors that are well-known, and just general, like, more mainstream stories, maybe not with queer people in the main characters. Those books I can find easily.
Yeah.
And then there is those books that are less mainstream, and then you just won't be able to find them. Or like you said, you have to order a big quantity.
Yeah. And it's it's a lot of money at once, especially for like, I mean, if you have a website, an online website, and you don't know who is interested in buying those stories, and you have to actually get the books to you before you actually know if you're going to sell them, it's a very big risk. And it's a big shame.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, because I remember, like, having conversations with people, and I'm pretty certain you find them even more than me, when they say, oh, I don't choose who I read. I simply pick up the books and I read them, right? I don't see if it's a man, if it's a woman, black, white, whatever. Because you were talking about that, like, even nowadays, very often, and I noticed this when I got a library card again, because when I moved to Rotterdam, like, Rotterdam has enough catalog in English for me to be interested in the library. And I remember that unless I actually searched for it, most of the things that I actually would pick up, in a sense, because they were in sight, so you could see mm-hmm. them, they were all by white authors.
Yeah.
And very often by men.
Yeah, if you go to the English section in the library here, there's... I went a couple of weeks ago to find out how many books I could find from black authors.
Oh, wow, that's a really great assignment.
I was just curious, like, what's their collection now? Because I know a couple of years ago, I also still read mostly books by white authors, and that's what I found in the library.
Yeah.
And I was wondering, like, did I miss out? And, you know, I started checking the shelves, and there was... something by James Baldwin, something from Audre Lorde, something from Toni Morrison.
Who are already very known.
Who were very well known. And then other than that, of course, I'm not going to say that I know every author or that I could see it immediately, but I know a lot of names that are familiar, but also the way some names are that you can recognize if it's a Afro-diaspora name mm-hmm. or an African name. And it weren't many, you know.
Yeah.
And if you're not actively looking for it in the shelves of the library, you're not gonna pick up a book by a black author.
Yeah, but it happens everywhere. You go to bookstores, and very often, unless they actually make it an effort, I think, like unless they actually make an effort, that you will not find. You will mostly just pick out. And I noticed this year actually. Last year I read mostly authors of color, and this year I paid less attention to what I was reading. And I ended up reading a lot more white authors, which it's okay, of course. But again, it kind of makes you realize unless I make an effort, those stories will not be, it's not going to be the first thing that's going to be put in front of my eyes. And that's everywhere.
Yeah, and even if they are, I feel like a lot of black authors and their books are framed a certain way in the media. Not necessarily negatively, but it's just there are some narratives that they really want to hear, especially the past few years. Like, there's this immigrant narrative for the Netherlands specifically. So there's Dutch, black, or, for example, Arabic writers
mm-hmm.
Who just have to write a story about how difficult it was growing up in a migrant family in the Netherlands.
Yeah.
And then, in the end, still going to university, for example, or still doing something and overcoming some troubles and... There they are, right? And it's such a typical story, and they just eat it up, you know? The mainstream media just want to hear it. And it's also the only way they will portray this author. Like, oh, this author with this background wrote this story about their family. And it's just, I saw recently, like, publishers, they let bookstores know in advance the books that are going to publish next year. And I saw this really small abstract from a book that has to come out next year. And it said something about the guy writing about his family, his culture, and his food. And it was really not a book like that. I think it was a memoir. But the way they framed it, it's like, oh, this is interesting about him, his foreign culture, his foreign food. That's what we're going to, that's what we're going to put in the abstract.
And I think there's a lot also of romanticizing. I don't like saying this, actually, in this situation. Not really romanticizing, but people feeding off of a story that is supposedly sad.
Mm-hmm.
Like, there's a new book that came out recently. I think it was this year still. And it talks again about, you know, like, the about Islam. Not in a good light. And the books that are out are usually talking about Islam in a bad light. You don't really see people talking about, like, the way they follow their religion. Simply like that. And I think people, like, white people feed on that, oh, this is so sad, mm-hmm. and this is so bad, and they are treated like, this is terrible, this would never happen, like, to us, you know, like kind of separating yourself from those stories. And I think there's a sort of a sadistic way of consuming sometimes media by authors of color. You want to see them suffer, and unless they're suffering, you don't care about their stories. It's like they're not worth telling, even.
Yeah, and even if an author, a black author or non-Western author, manages to get a book published, that's about something else, they will still frame it or do the marketing around it in that way. And the author doesn't have any say about that. You know, they wrote that beautiful book and then this is the way it's going to be marketed.
Yeah.
They don't even, like, someone else chooses the cover that's going to be on the book, you know? And it's all these things that are for marketing to white people.
Yeah. Sometimes they also say, oh, there is already one story about that. Mm-hmm. And then you look at the books published by white authors and it's like, there's so many stories about the same issue, but like one person of color writes about that and then, oh, that's enough. The market is full.
Yeah.
And then it's not because it sells and more people are interested in listening to those stories. But the tendency is just go, no, sorry. It's already taken.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm actually listening now to Crying in H. Mart? Yeah, H. Mart. And it's a memoir. And she talks about that. So her mother was Asian, her father was white. And she talks about how there was this singer that was also Asian, white, an American. And she thought, there's already someone. So I can't be a singer because she is already. So she's taken my spot. And then she started thinking about it. Yeah, like a white guy doesn't see, I don't know, Bruce Springsteen or whatever and thinks, oh, the market is taken. So
And I think that's why it's so important to have black-owned bookstores, black-owned publishing houses, essentially a black supply chain for literature. Because that's the only way that you can control what actually happens to a product of art, because a writer is an artist. And then if you have the rest of it, the publishing house and everything, you can frame it the way that it should be framed.
Yeah.
As a story from a human being.
Yeah, exactly. You know,
who also happens to be black and who maybe writes about a black experience, but still isn't part of a monolith. Because there are so many different black stories and black families and black lives. And I think up until that point that those places are there, like black publishing houses especially, it's hard.
Definitely. Yeah. If you do, and especially if you don't want to have people... If you have people saying, yeah, no, we don't want to publish those stories because there's no more interest in that. So you definitely need a channel that actually makes those stories available to the public and votes in them. Because you do see that in the marketing as well, very often. Like, I remember seeing Sally Rooney, the last book, here on the street next to the shops, because I live next to some main shops there. And I was like, whoa, they are actually advertising a book here. I never saw a book before being advertised here. And the money that publishers invest in the books is very important. And you see that a lot more in white people's stories.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, the media, the authors go to talk about their books. The way those nomination lists are made.
Oh, yeah. Oh.
Or the bestseller lists.
Oh, yeah. Sorry, I'm...
like, it's a hoax.
I'm still trying to get over the fact that there was a book that I really hated this year. I really disliked the book and it ended up in one of the best... I think it was the best 100 books of, like, ever in the New York Times or something. And I was like, did we read the same book? Because it's terrible. I'm sorry. Every time someone talks about the even Goodreads. And you can really tell. I think it's funny. I would like to have like a comparison with the story graph. I would love for the story graph to next year make like also some awards. Because the Goodreads awards, you would check the list of the books that were available and that were available for voting. And who won. Yeah. And you know there is clearly... a chunk of the population that is massively voting on Goodreads.
Yeah, I voted. And I only voted for books by black authors, actually. Yeah. Also because those were the only books I read, actually, from the list this year. But because they were great books, of course. And none of them won.
No, I also I actually read also a few of them, mostly by... I think, actually, the ones that I've read were by authors of color. And also, yeah, also voted for them. And then I checked the list and I was like, okay, how... No offense to Sally Rooney, but everybody said so many bad things about that book. Every single person that loved her other books actually said, you know what, this isn't great, but I still like her and I still like her writing and I still enjoy the book. But that makes it very clear that the book is not very good, especially in relation to her other works. And yet she still won.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, it's so you. So I'm really curious if the StoryGraph is ever going to do because I do have a feeling that the StoryGraph is more inclusive in the things that they do and the people taking care of it. So I hope they do that next year or whenever they have the availability to create an award like that. Because most awards are just very disappointing, I think. Are you planning on having books in translation available for buying through the Facebook space?
Yeah, I actually have one at this point.
Okay, I did not do my job.
Homework. That's all right. And it's called, it's in translation into Dutch, Duizend Kronkelwegen Angst from Olivia Wenzel. And it was originally written in German.
Okay.
Because I have this rule for myself. I really don't like reading in translation because I think lots gets lost in translation. Mm-hmm. But I don't speak German. I don't read German. I mean, I know a little German, but not enough. And then obviously my customers probably don't know German. So I had to make a choice because I really love the book when I read it in Dutch. Then I really thought it was great and it should be read. And also there are different books, non-English written books that I would like to have in my bookstore. For example, I would like to have more books from various African countries,
mm-hmm.
where, of course, some authors do write in English, but lots don't.
Yeah.
And just to have those books available, I would have to have translations. But then it's also something I noticed that a lot of books aren't translated.
It's true. It is true.
And then when they are translated, I feel like a lot of books, for example, in Dutch, there are really lots of bad Dutch translations.
Oh, okay.
Even, yeah. I mean, as a kid, something like Harry Potter is translated into Dutch. But it's just...
Yeah,
it's,
all the names.
Yeah, it's just, it's a disgrace.
Yeah.
It's honestly, it's a disgrace. And that's just a children's book that even shouldn't have been so hard to translate. But for books by Black authors, it's often translated by white translators who don't really know the world of experience that the writer is writing about. And it also happened for Olivia Wenzel's book, actually. And no, well, I can't compare because I haven't read the German, of course. But I did see that the English translation will be done by a Black professor, actually, who was a professor in Afro-German studies.
Oh, wow.
Which I think is amazing. Mm-hmm. And then someone like that doing a translator versus the Dutch translators who did it and whose only expertise is knowing German.
Yeah, of course. Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, because you got to know what you're talking about, especially when it comes to cultural things. Because sometimes no matter how good you can find stuff online, it's not the same as actually knowing the thing itself. And like, because, I wanted to talk like about translation and like it's clear why you believe that Black authors should be translated by Black translators. Because there was also this year or last year, I don't know, listen, the pandemic, I don't know where I am anymore. There was a situation with Mahaika Heinfeld.
Oh, right.
And they were going to translate the book by Amanda Gorman. And then there was like this whole situation in the Netherlands, like maybe they shouldn't be doing that, and then they kind of gave up on it. But I also was a bit even though I mean it's not specifically an attack to me obviously, but I did think the apology, or not even the apology, the thing that they put on Instagram was a bit, I thought it lacked a bit from Mahaika what they said about it, because there was like, okay, I just think it's better to step out, but there was no like,
or they didn't really
they didn't try to say, okay, I understand why this is, why I shouldn't have accepted it. I'm not a translator, to start off with. And I understand why a Black translator would do a better job than me. There was no kind of, like, apology in that sense. And I thought it was, I was a bit disappointed with that. But then that conversation started.
Yeah, and it's really important that it happened. And it's also what brought the publishing house that I mentioned before, Wilde Haren, to fame a bit, because they helped find Zaira Krieger, who the Black translator who translated it in the end, who also wasn't that hard to find because she was already pretty famous.
Yeah, okay.
As a spoken word artist. But of course the white publishing houses couldn't find someone.
No.
Didn't know any Black translator available. And that's just, I think there's multiple reasons. Of course, I think that a Black translator can translate better because they know, not completely, but in part, they know where the writer is coming from. But I also think it's important to actually give a job to those Black translators, because they're often overlooked. They're there, and then if they're not asked for jobs translating books by white authors, then they're also not asked for jobs translating books by black authors, then when are they even going to work?
Yeah.
You know, it's like a complete closed off, like it's so hard to get into this world of the publishing world. And then if you're black and you're just outside of it and you can't get in, because all these people making the decisions who gets to translate what are white.
Yeah. But and not even if you don't even get an opportunity when it's a black author, you're never going to get an opportunity. They're just not going to consider them.
Exactly. Yeah.
Are you planning on selling books that are not just geared towards adults at the Base Book Space?
Yeah, yeah, I am. I want to start in 2022 with selling young adult books, because I think it's an interesting genre, and there are many books now, not enough, but many black authors and young adult. And also, I still want to keep on reading most of the books myself to see if I like the book and think it's good. And then I don't really want to read through all the children's books for ages 12 and under. So I thought it would be a good start to, you know, do the young adult thing. And then later on, of course, I do want to expand into children's books. But I think at that point, also, I wouldn't be reading everything. And I would prefer to do that if I have a physical space. Yeah, I don't know. It just makes more sense to me.
Then can I get some help from someone, maybe? Just some recommendations and And do you already have some plans for like the books that you are going to have next year? Or are you still searching for them?
I think I have a list of 10 now, but then also I want to include books that are coming out next year, and I have to do a bit more research about those books. Sometimes I follow lots of bookstagrams and try to be in the loop of newly published books, but it's a lot. So yeah, sometimes I really decide pretty last minute, like, okay, I just saw this book right now and I had completely missed all the marketing about it, and now that I found it, I will sell it.
Yeah, because it must be a lot more fun if it's books that you want to read yourself. Because like we talked about it, I had the question as well here, but like, how do you select which titles to promote and to make available? And how does that process work? But it's basically a very personal thing as well. Like you find books that you want to read, and then you want to recommend.
Yeah.
It's basically that,
yeah, that's
right?
That's it. And I think if I had a physical store with lots of shelf space, I would include lots of classics as well, because I think that there are very important books like within beginning of the 20th century and middle of 20th century by, for example, Afro-American writers, but also a book such as Wij Slaven van Suriname from Anton de Kom, which is a really important Surinamese book. And right now I don't have those books because all the other bookstores, the bigger bookstores, have them, and those titles are pretty famous already. Yeah. So now I'm focusing more on getting new authors, giving them a place, and those new books that are written that have come out recently. But in the end, I would like to have this super big collection of just books by black authors, including from all countries in the African diaspora and different countries in Africa, of course.
What do you wish to achieve with the Base Book Space? What is the dream? Or the goal. It can be the goal and the dream. Like, what is?
I would like to have a physical space that's not just a book space, a bookstore, but also has a stage. So we can invite authors, readers can come together, maybe some bar kind of area. You know, just having a really big place for gathering. Black readers and creatives and everyone else who's interested and wants to read those books and talk about them. And yeah, it would be nice to have that in Rotterdam, I think, one day. But yeah, I'm not sure. On the way there, I think there's lots of other milestones that I also like to achieve, such as selling children's books, so having this bigger assortment.
Catalog.
And doing more author interviews. And just in general, getting more people to know about these books by black authors.
You've been promoting and presenting a few authors of the books offered by the Base Book Space via Instagram with live interviews. Is this something you'd like to do regularly? And where did the idea to do the lives come from?
Yeah, from the beginning, I wanted to have a way of having more interaction, something with the audience, the readers, something with the authors. it's like two ways for the authors. They can promote their book more, and then for the readers, they can learn a bit about the author, about the book before they decide to buy it. So yeah, I just thought it would be a cool thing to do. And then also since COVID, I think it's become so much more normal to just do those Instagram lives, and even older people who wouldn't have been on Instagram before, they were almost forced to do it because of lockdowns. So that made it easier for me to approach authors, because everyone already knew like what the concept would be. Like they got it, you know. They
it's
were
not
like,
new
"Oh,
anymore.
Fine." Yeah, it's not new anymore. So they would just agree to interviews, which is really amazing. And I would like to have one at least every month. But I, when I have time, I just approach authors that I sell the books from, and then I see when they can. I have one scheduled for March now, which is a bit far away, but it's because the author didn't have time in the beginning of the year. So, yeah.
Has it been easy to connect with people? Are people usually open to do the lives and...
Well, I have had to... First, I thought I could just DM people, but then I found out that lots of authors also have their Instagram as, like, their personal Instagram, or in general, they just don't want to discuss those things via Instagram. So then I started emailing them, and sometimes if you can't find an email address for the author, I had to first email the publishing house and ask them for permission or to get the email address from the author. So that has been a bit more work.
But it's rewarding. It's something that, it's nice to do when they kind of connect with you.
Yeah, for sure. And they never say that they don't want to. They just say that they're busy. You know, if they don't do it. So
nobody has ever said, no, I'm sorry, I don't want to do that.
Yeah, because at first I thought maybe they would say like, oh, but you're too small. You only have a couple hundred Instagram followers. Like, why would we do that with you? You know, like no one will watch. But no one said that.
Yeah, because I had the same when I started, before I started doing the interviews. I was like, are people even going to want to talk to me? And then when I interviewed Silvana from the Writer's Guide, she said, of course, Karine, everybody wants to talk about themselves. I mean, it does make sense, and they are promoting their book, even if it's small. But it was something that's why I was asking you, because it's something that really surprised me. That I think everybody says, yeah, sure. I was like, oh, really?
Okay. Yeah, exactly.
It's really a nice, and it's such a nice way to connect with people as well. How and where can we place an order and buy books from The Base Book Space?
At www.thebasebookspace.com. That's the web shop. You can just find all the books there, place your order. Then if you want to place like a custom order, something that's not on the website, like a classic, for example, you can use the contact form on the website. And you can also send a DM via Instagram, which is at The Base Book Space.
But there's somewhere else in Rotterdam where people can get your books, right?
Of course. Oh, wow. How can I forget? Karina's bookstore. No, you can also get a selection at Bos & De Jong, which
well,
is...
Well, it's not mine.
No, but...
I just work there.
Karina works there. But it's at Bos & De Jong at the Phoenix Voetloodse in Katen de Weg. So yeah, definitely go by there when the lockdown is over.
Yeah. You can also order, like... yeah, I mean, to order, you can order directly, of course, with Liana. But we are also open for picking up. So, and I hope when the shops are open again that you can see the little corner of the Base Book Space.
little quarter of a shelf.
Yeah, that, I mean, we are so small.
Yeah, no, but I'm really happy with the collaboration with Bos & De Jong, because they actually approached me when I just started out to talk about collaborating, and it's been great so far. So
for us as well, because like sometimes it's, you know, we try to read as diverse as possible, but we can't read everything that's in the shop, of course. So it's always nice to know that we have this person who actually curated that shelf. So if someone asks for something specific like that, we know it's, you know, it's in good hands, it's good books. We could just like, yeah, this I can recommend it even if I haven't read it, which sometimes is the case. So it's nice to see it there as well. And I already know where I can find you online. People can find you online on the website and on Instagram. And now it's the last question of the podcast, and the most difficult, of course, because I like to make things easier for people up to a certain point. And I would like to know an all-time favorite book and a book you would recommend right now.
Yeah, I had to think about this for a long time.
Which can be more than one, like I said, just not 20.
No. I'll keep it short, actually. So I have an all-time favorite fiction book, which is something that I read years ago. And I think I read it not twice because it's too many pages, but I still pick it up sometimes because I also have a copy. And that is 100 Years of Solitude by Gabriel García Márquez.
Because he writes, I've read not that one, but Love in the Time of Cholera. it describes a lot. They're chunky books.
Yeah, they are. And I really like the magic realism, they call it. And 100 Years of Solitude, it just describes this whole family history, like generation, generation of this family and all the things they go through in their village. And I just love the originality of it. And also the fact that it's placed in South America, of course, Colombia, where he's from. I love the setting there. So that's for fiction, all-time favorite, I think. And then I have two books that I have read this year. Well, one is Aftershocks from Nadia Owusu. Mm-hmm. It's a memoir, and it came out in spring of 2021. And I really, really loved it. It's written so beautifully, poetically, and it just tells her story. She's half Ghanaian, half Armenian. And she had a childhood moving around different places because her parents worked different in different countries. And it's just, yeah, it's just really written really well. And it's super moving. And it's been with me from the beginning of this year up till now, which isn't that long. But still, I know it's a book that I will read again and will still love. And then the other question that you asked, a book that I would recommend now. That's a book that I haven't finished yet, but I'm currently reading. And it's called Black Space, The Poetics of an Afro-Future by Anaïs Dublin. And he writes this book, and it's based on research he did about avant-garde Black artists. And it's just this collection, like there are some poems in it, and then there is interviews that he did, and there is, yeah, just parts of like essay writing. And I just really like the way that the book is made. In a way, it already feels Afrofuturist.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, and also the contents. So that's a recommendation for now.
Very well. And for more recommendations, you can get 5 every month at the Base Book Space.
Yeah.
So, Liana, thank you so much for coming to A Story of Sorts.
Thank you for having me.
You can access today's show's notes via my pod page, which you can find along with all of my social media links at linktree.com/Karina Pereira. If you have enjoyed this episode, please consider supporting A Story of Sorts on Patreon. Patreon is a platform which allows you to contribute monthly to the podcast in exchange for extra content, such as early access to episodes, a shout-out at the end of an episode and on Instagram, and choosing a theme for me to talk about on the podcast. You can become a patron at patreon.com/astoryofsorts. Leaving a review would also be highly appreciated. Don't forget to subscribe to get a notification when the next episode hits. I'll talk to you then, and thank you for listening.